It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We continue our Friday Weeks in Review, Week in Reviews, with politics. And we turn now to what has been happening in Washington, D.C. This week marked 100 days of the second Trump administration. It's a time when we've seen unprecedented use of executive power as Trump is focused on immigration and tariffs and slashing the federal workforce. Here to talk about the latest from the administration and beyond is Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon. Linda, always good to talk with you at the end of the week.
Oh, thank you, Brian, and quite a week it has been.
Indeed, and as we are taping, it's Thursday evening, so it's not even over yet. But let's start with the continued aftermath of the Signal chat, can we call it a scandal? Dust-up that... This first gained public attention when National Security Advisor Mike Waltz accidentally added an Atlantic magazine editor, the editor, to a group chat that had some information about the timing and strength and firepower and some military strikes against a terrorist group in the Middle East. At the time, President Trump stood by Waltz, but things are changing now. What is happening?
Well, early in the day, we had heard that Mike Waltz had been fired as the National Security Advisor to become the first member of the second Trump administration to be fired. And we all surmised it was due to Signal chat. You know that in his first term, he went through several National Security Advisors. In fact, Mike Flynn lasted only 10 days. So this was done after the first 100 days, where the president was celebrating what he said were 100 days of wins. And now with the firing of Mike Waltz, it wasn't until several hours later that the president made the announcement on social media that he was nominating Waltz to be the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. And that was a very surprising development as well, because his initial pick for the United Nations, Elise Stefanik from New York, a Republican in the House, who was all set to take that job, was asked weeks ago to reconsider and maybe stay in the House because her voice and her vote were so critical to pass the Trump agenda with the very slim majority in the Republican-controlled House. So the firing of Mike Waltz, sending him to the United Nations, subject, of course, to Senate confirmation, was seen in some ways as a conciliation prize, but in other ways as merely just moving the pieces around the chessboard, that the president personally likes Mike Waltz and that he feels he's a pretty good guy, and that seems to be the sentiment, and that maybe the job of National Security Advisor wasn't really such a great fit, but he would be better as UN ambassador. I suppose time will tell, and again, the Senate will have to confirm him.
Sort of an instance of falling upward. All right, well, that is something we will continue to watch play out. I'm sure there will be more news on that in the weeks ahead. Let's talk also about tariffs. There are people in the world of logistics who are saying shelves are going to be empty, you know, could be empty fairly soon. Their trade with China is in some state of collapse. There's a lot fewer shipping containers coming, a lot fewer bookings of cargo aircraft between America and China. Our gross domestic product actually dropped in the last quarter. Do you get the sense from the administration in the White House that they might be having any second thoughts on the tariffs?
Well, if they are, they're certainly not projecting that. In fact, President Trump at a cabinet meeting this week did note the drop in the gross domestic product, the GDP of 0.3%. And he said that that was for the quarter, January through March. Keep in mind, the president took office January 20th. He said it wasn't his GDP, it was Biden's. And that the result of that small dip, which is actually quite a large dip in the gross domestic product, was really not his fault at all, that he had inherited it. And when asked if the GDP also is down due to the tariffs, for example, in the next quarter, he said, well, that would probably be Biden's fault as well. because of policies that continue on from one quarter to the next. But by then, the president of the United States will have been in that position for 6 months.
One other story I want to ask you about before I let you go, and that is Kilmer Obrego Garcia, the man from El Salvador originally, who was in the United States on a sort of in-between status. He was not supposed to be deported, but the administration has admitted there was a bureaucratic mistake. He's now being detained in a prison in El Salvador, although he has been moved away from that notorious almost concentration camp, prison where people are sent with no expectation of release. The U.S. Supreme Court has told the United States to facilitate his return. Is the United States government doing that? What's the latest?
Well, that was a direct question posed to Secretary of State Marco Rubio. And he told the White House reporters, when asked that question, have you been in touch with El Salvador about returning Obrego Garcia? Has a formal request been made from the administration? And his response was, I would never tell you that. And you know who else I would never tell? A judge. Because the conduct of our foreign policy belongs with the President of the United States and the executive branch, not some judge. We will conduct foreign policy appropriately if we need to, but I will not discuss it. And no one can make us discuss it because that's how foreign policy works. That's the exact quote from the Secretary of State. So that is the response from the Trump administration. I will tell you that when the Secretary of State was saying that, he was sitting directly to the president's right, and I could see the president's face, and he was kind of smirking and smiling throughout it. He certainly seems to have a lot of admiration for Marco Rubio, and he seems to have entrusted him with a lot of responsibility, and he likes his responses.
And a fourth job title this week, right?
So yes. He's going to be the interim National Security Advisor while he is Secretary of State. And by the way, he has basically two other jobs as well. He is the archivist of the U.S. because that person was ousted through the DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. And he's also the administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development. So these are four hats he's wearing right now. And each one of those jobs is a 24/7 job. So it's going to be interesting to see how long he can hold up with that kind of pressure and that kind of responsibility.
Quite a long way to travel for a man that President Trump once called Little Marco. All right,
yes.
Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent. Thank you as always.
You're welcome.
It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, back live. Now we turn to state politics, where a lot has been happening, from United States Senate news to updates in the bribery case of State Senator Emil Jones III. Here to talk about all of that and more is Hannah Meisel, reporter with Capital News Illinois. Hannah, it's been a minute. Good to talk with you again.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So the race is on to succeed Dick Durbin as U.S. Senator for Illinois. We talked about his retirement last week, but we didn't have too much time to get into the people who may be lining up to try and, again, be next in line. And, you know, what seemed like was going to be a hot race, I don't know, there's some early momentum here. Tell us about Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and the endorsements she's been raking in.
Yeah, so far, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton is the only person in the race. I will note, though, that it's early days. We have a long time to go, until that primary battle. Most voters are not paying attention. We will have more folks jump in the race, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, at the time that you were taping, recording last week's show, Juliana Stratton had just gotten the official endorsement from Governor J.B. Pritzker. I actually went to that event in Chicago's Bronzeville neighborhood. And then early Monday morning, everyone's inbox, you woke up to an alert that said that Tammy Duckworth, Illinois' junior U.S. senator, had officially endorsed Juliana Stratton. Those are two major endorsements. When you look at the hierarchy of Democratic political power in Illinois, those are two people who are, on that higher end. And especially with Governor J.B. Pritzker and his, he is a billionaire. His status as a, you know, one of the wealthiest politicians until Donald Trump returned to office in January, he was the wealthiest politician in the U.S. And, you know, he is undoubtedly going to put money behind his lieutenant governor there. And, you know, it's also a way for him to make some more inroads in Washington. You know, he and Dick Durbin didn't always see eye to eye on how to approach things, both intra-party and inter-party. And, you know, with Dick Durbin stepping down, Pritzker can have more of a direct, you know, access line to Washington if Julianne Stratton does, you know, win that primary. And then, you know, I guess it's assumed at this point, Illinois is a very blue state, but she has a good chance, or whoever the Democratic nominee is, would have a good chance of going on to win the primary in November of 2026. But,
yeah,
you know,
I want to get to that
he has flirted, you know, for years now with running for president.
I want to get to the Senate election itself, the general election, in a moment. But I want to stay with some of the Democratic candidates, right? We've heard names like Congresswoman Robin Kelly and Lauren Underwood and Congressman Raja Krishnamurti. I heard a public radio reporter quipping from downstate, I should say, saying that they've had more events with Raja Krishnamurti in their area than they have with their actual local member of Congress. So what are we hearing from them? Are they waiting? Are they waiting and seeing? Are they, you know, there's no one else in the race yet, I guess.
Right. Raja Krishnamurti, a congressman from the Schaumburg area, pretty big, diverse district in the suburbs of Chicago. He did have a three-stop jaunt in central and southern Illinois last week. You know, it's been pretty, just like it's been an open secret that Julianne Stratton has been eyeing the seat, so too has he. And he certainly has the most money in his campaign account, $19 million, compared with, you know, Robin Kelly and Lauren Underwood, who are also have been, you know, rumored to have some sort of interest in the seat. You know, he might be the best, you know, positioned in certain ways to do that. But, you know, Robin Kelly also, you know, she's a really interesting figure. Dick Durbin had actually backed her to take over the chairmanship of the Democratic Party of Illinois after a former Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan stepped down from the position in early 2021 after he was, you know, kind of ousted from his, you know, his longtime seat at the head of Illinois politics as Speaker. And she was in that position for a year as chair of DPI. And, you know, from what I've heard, Democrats, you know, really liked what she had done in that role. But, you know, Pritzker and his allies, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say staged a coup necessarily, but ousted her as chair. And, you know, so they... a Pritzker ally is now in that role. But I wouldn't be surprised if Robin Kelly got into the race, but I also wouldn't be surprised if she didn't. You know, she has, you know, she's older. She knows what she wants to do. You know, speaking of age, I hate to put it in terms like this, but, you know, the Senate is, there's a reason why, you know, it's regarded as a white hair society, kind of. And Lauren Underwood is certainly on the much younger end of the spectrum. You know, she's certainly, sure, even as a member of the House, she is a younger member. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. But all of these people, they would have to carve out their own paths. Which I wouldn't say is hard to do because it's still, like I said, early days.
It's early days, yeah, although against potentially the governor of their own state with billions of dollars at his disposal. Let's just spend a minute or a brief amount of time. What about the Republican side? Is there any excitement or potential candidates being talked about there?
Yeah, you know, the name I've heard most thrown around is Congressman Darren LaHood, who represents a pretty wide swath of central Illinois, though he himself is based in the Peoria area. Of course, he is the son of Ray LaHood, you know, former congressman and in the Obama administration. He and his son do not necessarily see eye to eye on, you know, Republican politics. Darren LaHood has certainly aligned himself with Donald Trump much more than Ray LaHood would ever dream. But, you know, it's interesting because I've, you know, you and I both, Brian, we've watched these big statewide elections go by for years, and the Republican Party doesn't really put up much of a candidate.
It's hard to get the top tier Republicans to want to run in these races.
Right. They're
pretty much losers statewide. Yeah. All right. Well, we will, you know, you never know. You never know. And we'll continue to follow that. So little time left. I do want to talk about what's the deal with federal prosecutors. They wanted $3 million from a convicted felon and former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Now they're like, oh, never mind. What's up with that?
Yeah, you know, we don't really know. These things are kind of a black box. It was a very brief two-page filing filed late last Friday. And basically, you know, they said, as a matter of discretion, we're no longer seeking that $3 million. You know, ostensibly, this is half from the Madigan allies who got no work jobs at ComEd. And then another ally whose law firm did get a real, you know, contract at ComEd. And so altogether, that would be about $3 million. And the feds are just no longer seeking that. You know, we don't know, but we can say for certain there is new leadership at the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago. And yeah. Also there's a concern about, you know, maybe these a lot of these bribery related counts, not only in the Madigan case, but in other cases that I've watched in the last, you know, not even year, possibly being overturned, you know, based on what the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled. And also we've seen juries, you know, arrive at deadlock in these specific bribery counts. So yeah, not having something stand would be legally, you know, perilous.
We'll have to leave it there. Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st show. More to come after a break. Stay with us.